welcome to another edition of the Open Paddock Rallycast. This is episode 21 for Wednesday, September 20th. And after us having four episodes in a row, well, unfortunately, we had a bit of a break. I ended up going on vacation. We tried it once before, but I wasn't able to get it edited in time, and then time lapsed and took too long. So, we are going to again go over a review of the final round of the American Rally Association National Championship Series, and what an exciting round it was, as well as a bit of WRC news and a little bit about Rally America's event that they had in Wyoming. Kick back, have a beer like we are. This is the Open Paddock Rallycast. Well, as I said, we're back. I'm your host, Mike Shaw, and with me, as always, is my favorite English co-driver, Ian Holmes. Ian, how you doing?
The introductions get better every time, don't they? You're going to embarrass me and embarrass me. And I am doing pretty good. I'm certainly doing better than I was at the start of the weekend, because I came down with the man flu, and I could barely talk on Friday, was it? So I can now talk, but I'm poised up on the mute button on my headset, just in case I have a coughing fit. So, but we'll gut through it and we'll see how we go.
Well, speaking of which, we have you now in high definition. You got yourself some new equipment there, as we also have some new equipment here. So, I actually have to give a bit of a shout out to Derek Johnson, who's one of our big followers with this podcast, and he's also one of the awesome volunteers. Always volunteers at Oregon Trail Rally and at Olympus. He's such a hard worker and such a huge fan of the sport. Well, just before I left on vacation, after I got back from the last round, he had sent me a nifty new thing called a Yeti microphone and a little pop filter and all that stuff. So hopefully it comes out better than our previous podcast. So thank you, huge thank you to Derek for that stuff, though. This is some pretty cool kit. So let's talk some rally news as we kick back and enjoy our adult beverages. We'll start off with a little bit of WRC stuff. Now, the last round was WRC Germany, and it's been a little while ago. Gosh, such a big gap between Germany and Spain. It's almost like summer break, Ian.
It's almost like that, but isn't this where they were supposed to, like, put in Rally China?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Rally China kind of like got dropped. So, I mean, they had that on the calendar for 2 years. So the gap is there for 2 years, I think. So, yeah, it's a big gap. And yeah, you kind of like forget what's gone on before. And there's not been an awful lot of activity going on, other than like this past week or so, isn't it? It's been the drivers really have been taking a break.
They have been. I mean, obviously, there's big pressure on right now for the silly season, right? There's who's going to go where? And that seems like every show that we keep coming back to that. And the most recent announcement has really been Mikkelsen, right? He last drove in Germany in the Citroen and got an amazing second place. I mean, just unheard of for that car that's been so hard to handle, really, for most drivers. And yet his deal he got is with Hyundai.
You've just got to wonder, haven't you? I mean, he really did do so well with the Citroen, and Citroen made a really big deal about it when they hired him for these couple of events, and then he goes to Hyundai. Yeah, there's something going on at Citroën that we can only speculate about. But yeah, I think he's going to be a good fit over at Hyundai. I think that's going to be a good team for next year.
Well, you know, we know that they've had a very capable car. As far as, you know, it's been the most consistent car, I think, from reliability and performance alike, other than the M Sport Fiestas. And you know, other than some silly mistakes here and there, I mean, they've been kind of the ones to, you know, to beat, I think. You know, silly mistakes is what kind of caught them out. But what does this mean for the team when Mikkelsen is set to drive all remaining rounds, right? So that's Spain, Wales Rally GB, and in Australia,
Mm-hmm.
they're still running only three cars.
Yep, yeah.
So that means, so we already know Paddon's not going to do Spain, right?
Yeah. And the wording from, oh God, how come I always forget the guy at the head guy at Hyundai's name? Is
Michel
it
Nandon.
Mandon? That's it. I'm thinking of Mandan, North Dakota. Maybe I should get that in my mind, and I'll be able to like remember it. But yeah, he's said that it will be a different lineup for each of the remaining rounds. So that means Paddon is going to be in at one of these two rounds,
You
and what
know
will
that Paddon's definitely going to be in Australia,
yeah
right?
he's
I
yeah
mean, the link between Paddon and Hyundai has always been strong. I mean, look, the
mm-hmm
AP4 car he's been driving in New Zealand. Look at, his really close ties that he's got in his home country. And yeah, I can't imagine him not driving in Australia. So that's definitely Australia. We know he's
yeah
out for Spain. But what about Wales? I would think that again, he's really good on gravel. Although lately, we've seen where Danny Sordo can come into his own as well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I was, yeah, yeah, Paddon's definitely, I'm pretty sure he's a shoo-in for Australia, but yeah, I really would be expecting Paddon to compete in Wales as well, but
So that
yeah,
means
but it's
Sordo's got one round left in
Sordo's
Spain, and
one
that's it.
round left, and yeah. It's the way he the way Mandon said that it was going to be a different lineup every round. So
Yeah.
does somebody else drop out? I mean, who?
Well,
I
it's
mean,
obviously not going to be, second in the championship.
no,
It's not, so it's not going to be Thierry.
no.
So it's only really between Sordo and Patton. So you can't change it every round if there's three rounds left and there's only two potential.
That's very, yep, that's it, yeah.
The maths don't work right,
No. Nope. So there's something we'll just have to speculate about a bit more another
Now,
time.
the other speculation thing is that this Mikkelsen deal is that he wouldn't have taken it if he didn't have something for 2018.
Yeah.
So, see, we know that, all three of them are still under contract for 2018, aren't they? All three of the existing?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. I think across the board, nearly everybody is, apart
So
from.
I think it's got to be a fourth car. It
There,
had
there's
to
been a
be.
lot of that. There has been a lot of talk about four cars lately. So I don't know if that's something that has to be ratified by the WRC, but I've heard a
Well,
lot.
you can put in four cars. It just doesn't
Yeah.
mean you can get points for four
No.
cars, right?
No.
So I think what they
So.
might do is run four cars, but then say these guys are eligible, maybe take the pressure off of Paddon for a season, see if he can come back into what we know he is capable of.
Yeah. And of course, if Ogier has already won the world title by the time it gets to Australia, it takes a lot of pressure off across the board anyway, doesn't it?
That's true. Well, speaking of titles, that manufacturer's title is all but sewn up by M Sport now. Talk about an amazing performance by that team. Everything from Elvin Evans, who contributes points, right? Because it is three cars that contribute points, right, for manufacturer. And so he's got it in the D-Mac car. He's given points, and then you got points coming from consistent, obviously from Ogier. And from Tanak. So,
Yeah.
wow,
They
just a great job. Were they on the podium every time or something
po
so far?
podium in every event. Yeah, I mean it's like it's the perfect team. You've got you have Ogier and Tanak winning, and then you've got Elvin Evans backing them up all the time. It's that's this is the way the team a team a rally team should be won and run, and this is the way that everybody else is going to have to try and emulate them next year. They've really done amazingly well. So
Yeah, certainly. The tough thing is what's going to happen when they don't have OGA, because it's looking like, even with this amazing performance by M Sport, the private funds coming directly from Malcolm's pocket to help pay for OGA can't stay unless they've got a big sponsor and or Ford steps in as a to back them officially. And it's not looking like that's going to happen. I'd like to see it happen,
Yeah,
but I don't get it.
it's gone very, very quiet out of Dovenby Hall in up in the Lake District. There's not a lot being said at all. It's down to the all the reporters and people like Colin Clark and Bexy to speculate and come up with their own crazy ideas. However crazy they are, they might just one of them might just be the right scheme. It's I mean, if Ogier goes, that frees up a seat at M Sport. Who comes in? Yeah, I mean, Teemu Suninen could come in on his form currently quite easily, couldn't he? So.
Yeah, he could. Yeah, it'll be interesting how the Citroen thing turns out too, because as we talked about, I think we talked about a little bit last time, the joining of Peugeot and Citroen into the one, whatever that group is, the P something PG,
PR, yeah.
whatever it is, yeah,
Yeah,
PR
it's French.
Motorsports, yeah, the
Yeah.
French team, anyways, that combines both. Which now Loeb is not only set to probably drive the car in 2018 for some rounds, but he's been doing a lot of testing already, right? So
Yeah.
even
He's
testing
test.
in gravel just this
Yeah,
week.
just this week. Yes, that was quite exciting to see. It's like Citroën are really doubling down now. I think it's just a matter of time before they make an announcement that Loeb will be competing perhaps on a limited basis next year. But I think that's what's going to happen, and they're going to have an incredible team lineup of like Ogier, Loeb, and Meek, and where does Craig Breen fit into it? Where do they go from there? You know,
Yeah, Lefebvre.
Lefebvre, that's the guy's name I was looking for. I mean, you've got it, again. It's looking like they could run a four car team as well, or
Yeah, you'd still
and.
have to have some. I'm still thinking they'd probably do car sharing between Lefebvre and Breen, is my guess. But yeah, because you'd have Ogier definitely full time. I mean, and there's no no qualms about it. Yves Matton is saying he's trying as hard as he can to get Ogier. And so that means they're going to have to come up with something pretty good for Ogier at M Sport. They're going to have to get a good deal somehow. He'd like to stay, he said,
Yeah,
but
he
you've got to
really
make it
like.
worthwhile. I mean, he doesn't have the Volkswagen money anymore, right? So he was in that contract with Volkswagen. Then when they dropped out, he still had one more year for them to pay, in addition to, obviously what he gets from sponsor dollars and all that stuff. And that's what helped make it so Malcolm could make it happen, but that goes away in 2018. So, wow, yeah, a tough deal for those guys. But yeah, Citroën's gonna have their own complexities, and of course we all remember the, a much younger Ogier with Loeb on the same team, and there are a bit of fireworks at times. Do you think that would still happen in
No,
2018, or do you think that's kind of water under the bridge kind of thing?
I think they're older and wiser now, aren't they? I think cooler heads will prevail. I mean, it's like Ogier certainly this year has been learning a lot about how to be a team player, and what performances for the car are best for the team. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I think there's just going to be an overall a different level of maturity from everybody. So, it's like Ogier's got a couple of years before he retires and goes and do something else, and Loeb has already retired once and is coming back. So, I mean, there's calm heads there. They've been there. They've done it all before. So, I think they can be mature, responsible adults now, and there'll be no hot-headedness and such like.
So the team we haven't really talked about yet is Toyota. I don't know what's going on over there yet. You can imagine they'd want to get a world champion on their team, but then again, would they want that pressure with Jari Matti? Probably not, because when those two were on the same team, he's even admitted it was really hard for him. Not that they disliked each other in any manner. It was just that pressure of having I think Ogier and just his, I don't know, he was just a superior driver, right? I mean, there were times that that Yari Matty was very good. There's times he's even beat Ogier, but I think him just feeling constantly under pressure with someone of that caliber on the same team was a little harder for him. So he's obviously done well as a as the team leader at this point. So I don't think they'd want an Ogier over there.
No.
But I can't really foresee that they're going to continue on with Juho Hänninen. So I would assume that they're going to have somebody else maybe in one of those seats. We know that definitely we'll have the other young Finn there, and here I'm losing names.
It's easy with Finnish names to like forget them, isn't
I
it?
know,
Get
isn't it?
confused with them.
Yeah.
Esa-Pekka
That's it, Lappy.
Yeah, there we go. Ah, we got there at the end. And it's a short name. We shouldn't have tripped up over Lappy, should we, really?
Right. It was the Esa-Pekka that got me.
Yeah.
Anyways, so he's definitely gonna be there. You're definitely gonna have gonna continue having Yari Matty there. Who would be a third person for them? I would bet they'd try for Teemu, but I can see Teemu staying at M Sport as well.
I
There's, yeah.
who was it came up with the idea that Tanak would end up at Toyota? I heard that from somebody in the
That's a
past
definitely a
few weeks.
possibility.
Yeah.
Boy, that would really cut a
That would.
lot of potential out of M Sport. I mean,
Yeah.
Evans has done well, but he's not the he doesn't have the experience of Voigt, nor near the experience of Ogier, and I don't think he's quite team leader material at this point.
No.
Great driver, but not a team leader. Wow, yeah, that's interesting. Don't know. So, yeah, silly season gets sillier all the time.
It sure does, doesn't it? My goodness.
So, speaking of interesting things kind of here, we talked about Loeb being on gravel already. We were talking about Citroën and how they've got all their issues and they've been trying to overcome them. They just made this big splash announcement just before I left on vacation about this new thing coming out September 4th, and the release comes out and they're doing a R5 version of their C3.
Yeah.
So this
Whoop-dee.
is a customer car. This is one they're
Yeah.
trying to sell. Their DS3 R5 did meh,
Yeah.
it wasn't terribly competitive. I mean, it was, in the right hands, it did okay. I remember as Brian Bouffier, I think, drove it a couple times and was pretty quick in a couple of ERC rounds. But I think it was ex more expensive to run than some of the other ones. The Skoda was really dominant,
Yeah.
as was, of course, the Fiesta. So, and of course, Hyundai's got their R5 they're working on bringing out. So, why would they introduce a C3 R5 while the current WRC C3 is not looking very good? It seems like kind of a risky move.
Well, yeah, but there is a lot of money to be had in making and selling these R5 cars, isn't there? Because M Sport have shifted over 200 of their R5 Fiesta, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been very successful with that, without a doubt.
So, and I do believe that the C3, this R5 Citroen C3, it's less dependent on custom-made parts that have been causing the trouble in the WRC car.
Well, I mean, that's true of all R5s.
So.
R5s use definitely more off-the-shelf parts. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the homologation. But I guess the suspension is still going to be, some sort of custom suspension component or whatever. They're not,
Yeah.
it's not the stock suspension, I should say.
Yeah, I think
Whether it's
that's the tr-
Raiger, whether it's
Yeah.
one of those other brands of suspension components, and that's where the car seems like it's had several issues. Either that or maybe it's with the differentials with the four-wheel drive drivetrain.
Yeah.
Some of those components will probably be somewhat similar to what's used in the WRC car. So, yeah, I think they're going to have a really good driver in that R5 to get it to sell. So, could that be something that we see with the split car, maybe with Breen and Lefebvre? One drives the R5 into the event, and while the other one drives a WRC car, and then they switch or something like that, gives them seat time and gets them to take a top level driver to show off the R5.
That's a very good idea. That go and put that one to the Citroen guys. I like that idea. Yeah.
I think I got Eve on speed dial here. So the R5, I'd like to see more of those here in the States. So regardless of what I said about the concerns of the R5, the Citroen one, please bring them here.
Yeah, there we go, yeah.
All right, the other thing that happened also, gosh, I think it was just today that we saw the announcement.
Yes, just this morning. You are talking about the Teenage Wonder Kid.
Yes, the next Teenage Wonder Kid, because we had several of those over the years. Well, I guess they're just young adults, but this is truly a teenager.
Yeah, we have one a week at the minute, don't we, coming from the Scandinavian countries.
Seems that way. Yeah. Is it Kaylee Rovanpera?
Kaylee Rovanpera, yes.
Kaylee Rovanpera. So this is Harry Rovanpera's son, right?
That's correct, yeah.
His son's already been, like, dominant in what is he? He's 16.
He's about 16. Yeah, but there's YouTube videos of him this kid driving rally cars from like when he's like barely old enough to reach the pedals. So he's like been driving rally cars for like probably as long, almost as long as he can walk. You know, it's incredible. So yeah, he's. And all this is like now paying off. He's going to. He's got an M Sport Fiesta R5 drive. In WRC2, and that's in not only in Wales, but he also gets a trip to Australia. I mean, that's the thing that shocked me this morning when we heard the news. You know, Wales was pretty much a given. It's Europe's close to home, so figured that was a pretty good bet that he would have a drive here, but to be shuttled over to the other side of the world as well, that was a pretty interesting move by M Sport.
I think it's a pretty strong statement that they want him in an R5 next year for the championship. I think there's still kind of no doubts about it. Although he's also one of those that are in line for Hyundai's got their own little junior driver program thing that they've started, and he's signed up to potentially be on that list too, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you can drive there at the moment. There's people from who drive all kinds of cars that are signed up for that, because Gus Greensmith is one of those guys as well, and he drives a Fiesta. So shouldn't be read into what car you're driving now, as to if you're a part of this Hyundai program, however it works.
Yeah. Well, last bit of news I guess that we're gonna throw in here is apparently this awesome championship we've had with the WRC, that's been helping viewership quite a bit. They're saying that they've had a 17% increase compared to the same time period in 2016 at this point in the season.
Yeah, that's it's great.
Pretty impressive.
Absolutely. And it's the WRC is the one of the sporting circuses that excuse the use of that word, but it's the first one that came to mind. It's the first one. It's one of those that's leading the way with internet coverage and streaming and stuff like that, isn't it? So it's, you can get a lot more coverage of WRC from streams and such like than you can through the regular television.
Well, they've also been steadily expanding their mainstream television coverage across the globe.
Yeah.
You know, one place that's severely limited or pretty much non-existent is here in the States, but the U.S., I believe, is the largest subscriber of WRC Plus. Either they're the second largest, from what I remember hearing. So, obviously, people want to watch the content. I know I have WRC Plus to watch it. You have it, you know.
Yeah.
Big rally fans, we will find a way to watch this stuff if you give us the ability. So, good stuff there. Great to see that expand. So definitely happy to hear it. So let's move on to something a little more domestic. We had our American Rally Association National Championship event in Ojibwe, and I got to see you there. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was awesome. I mean, that was, you know, we sit here and once or twice a month chatting over Skype about rally, and to meet you in person was great. That was a lot. It was a lot of fun. So of course you let me play analyst on the co-commentator on the jump there at Crossroads, which was a great experience. So it was a good couple of days all round.
It was a very dramatic couple of days. It started out, you know, kind of dry. It wasn't hot. It was, I think, cooler temps.
Yeah.
And then the rain moved in on Saturday, just became a slimy, mucky mess. Uh-huh. And during this, you know, having such changeable conditions with a championship on the line, right?
Yeah.
We had it where, you know, we knew it was going to come down to the wire for this event between the top two drivers, the Super Rally Team USA's, you know, David Higgins and Travis Pastrana. But, you know, we kind of figured, it's like, well, you know, Travis not only has to win the event, but he also has to win by stage win differential, I guess you could almost call it, mm-hmm. right? So they had a numerical system for every stage in the entire season. If you finished first on the event, if you finished first on that stage, then there was no points against you. Second on the event, there was 1 point against you. And, you know, as you went down the list, they kind of did this calculation, and it's almost like golf, you know, you want the fewest points for that, where you finished the stages.
Yeah.
And because the times that David had issues, he dropped farther back mm-hmm. than Travis did, that it actually came out to where I think it was only separated by two total of these points going into this round.
Yeah.
So Travis had to not only win the event, but win more stages than David, and then, yeah, and David couldn't finish just second. I think he had to finish, you know, like two below or something like that. Anyways, very complicated maths to figure this one out.
I was on the Saturday night, but just before the street stage, in Detroit Lakes, I was talking with Eric Nelson there, and we were talking about this ourselves. He was describing all the tiebreakers that he would have to go through to split them, and there wasn't a tiebreak to split them. He said there was a chance that the results would fall in the right way, that they wouldn't be able to split them at all.
Oh, they had a plan for that.
Yeah, they said they had a plan.
They had a plan for that. Yeah, they're like, the existing tiebreaker rules they had, if there's still a potential for a tie in that situation. Mm-hmm. So they came up with a plan on how they're going to resolve that on that last stage.
Yeah.
It didn't, as we all know now, it didn't have to come to that, but it was definitely an interesting scenario to entertain,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Yeah.
You know, but I want to talk about Ojibwe for a little bit, because I do like about talking about these different events that I've never been to. And, mm-hmm. you know, having toured the country and gotten to see some of these roads for the first time, and you've actually been on these roads as a competitor, right, Ian?
Yeah. It's they're very cool roads. I mean, you got to see some of the very best roads there, because you were actually doing live stream from the causeway on the Saturday, weren't you? That's by Height of the Land Lake or something like that, and that is a beautiful piece of rally road. That is, I remember where first time I went through that. Yeah, I was the sunlight was perfect, and I just stopped calling for a minute, because it was so stunningly beautiful. So you really saw some great roads there.
Yeah, that one, and then on Friday, that was the interesting one. You had some very interesting stage roads. That was closer to Walker area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those roads had just flat out straight hard packed gravel that mm-hmm. I swear it was just straight for a mile, you know, well covered in trees, but it was almost like a gravel highway. You'd be top gear, mm-hmm. you know, flat out for forever, it seems. Then it was like slam on the brakes, hairpin left, and the junction that you went onto the side road, that it was an ATV trail. I mean, this thing was rock crawling. We were tiptoeing the the cross trek that we had, and thanks to Muscatel Subaru for letting us borrow that car. But Matt was driving this little Subaru cross trek and trying to just daintily go over these rocks, and it was literally boulder climbing in some parts of this. It was so rocky, so narrow, multiple water splashes, and then you know about a mile and a half later, 2 miles later of this slow going, and literally there's tree branches and mm-hmm. you know, brush hitting the side of the car, and we're not a big car that we're in, and not going at race speed. And then you pop out and you're on another one of these really fast roads, not as straight, some nice flowing stuff, but the conditions totally changed to where it's like almost a sandy loam like soil,
you know,
it's dirt mixed with like a sand. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because when we hit the corners like with that stuff, it felt like it was kind of starting to soften up, and like it was going to, and this is just on recce.
Yeah.
It felt like it was going to dig out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This, I know the stretch of road you're talking about. This is like on stage two, cause I like set myself up there with my camera. Cause it was an uphill hairpin left off the goat track, as everybody was calling it. And it was up, and then it was back onto the fast forest road. But I was talking to Al Dantes on Thursday after recce, and he said that he was driving down that track at 8 miles an hour in his F-150, and he felt like he was going too fast. So how anybody managed to go down that goat track in a rally car is beyond me. But that corner where you came off the goat track and when uphill hairpin left, it cut up very quickly and very easily. It was okay for the guys, you know, in their four-wheel drive cars, they got around with no problem, but their four-wheel drive was probably actually contributing to the cutting up of the surface. But it was interesting because I watch, and nearly everybody had like a different line as to take this hairpin. You know, Higgins and Pastrana and Jeff Seahorn were all on the inside, and then Barry McKenna came way out to the outside, and everybody was like looking for like a relatively undisturbed piece of road where they could actually get some grip on. And of course this cut it up for everybody else further down. You know, by the time you got to the two-wheel drive cars, I mean, we actually had both times round, we had cars beach there and get stuck.
Sounds first, like a NASA sandblast event almost.
Almost, yeah. I forget, it was Matt Coatsworth and Ben Anderson the first time round. They got their Dodge, I think they have a Dodge Neon. They got that stuck there and had to be pulled out. And then the second time round, Al Dantes got stuck there for about 9 minutes, he was telling me. So,
oh, my.
So, yeah,
rear-wheel drive RX-7. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that happening.
But
not
yeah,
the most ground clearance plus rear-wheel drive. A little tough.
No. But roads like that are roads like that, and that change of road surfaces, it's almost like a signature feature of Ojibwe. So I mean, I've been through it, so you get to expect it. So, and it's, and when you're doing it well, it's fun. But if you're stuck and you're having to try and push yourself out of sand, then I guess it's no fun at all.
Yeah. And then those Saturday stages, even though it was wet, I know that when Matt and I were on there doing the recce on those, some of those sections were totally like Finland. I mean, the crest after crest, you know, some of them straight, then some nice flowing corners in there, really fast and flowing stuff when it's dry. But Dryett was not. We lost Barry McKenna on that strange. Gosh, what is this? Not Palmer. What's the name of that road? Anyway, whatever the name
I think we lost him on Perkins.
Perkins, that's the name
Perkins.
Of it. Yeah,
so yeah,
it's a long stage, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like nearly 20 miles.
Yeah, I think it was, somewhere around 18, 19.
Yeah, because I was on Perkins as well on the Saturday. He didn't make it to me, and I was about two-thirds of the way into the stage, and he didn't make it to me, so I was really disappointed there, because you know, that's one of my favorite cars to see. So
he didn't make it through when we saw... Jeff Seahorn and Karen Jankowski go by. The car was sitting low, and you could tell that the tire was rubbing, so they broke some suspension going a little wide and hitting the stump. Pastrana, I think, went wide on that one as well, but didn't hit anything. Nothing too hard, anyways. See here. There was just all kinds of issues. I mean, we were just trying to get out to that spot on the causeway.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in a four-wheel drive little Subaru, and that thing, whenever that cross track that Matt was turning it, it just kept understeering through all that muck. It was just tough to get it through, and you get a little bit off the line that everybody was driving in, and it was ice. It would just slide you way out. Because, you know, you want to get there when you're right behind, you know, one of the zero cars. You want to get there in a hurry because they got to run the stage. You don't want them, obviously, media. We can't be holding up things. So we were definitely going out there at a good clip. And, it was some nasty conditions. Racing on that surface must have been, like I said, a little hair-raising. But the story of the weekend was what was going to happen at the top, I think. Although we were still wondering what was going to happen with restricted open, considering what happened with Jeff Seahorn when he came by us. But, you know, it turns out they were able to repair the car in service, and they came out just fine. But with Higgins, man, it seemed like the entire universe was conspiring against him to not win this championship. And we all know now that Travis won. Yeah. But it was only close because everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
A perfect storm of things that could go wrong, really, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't just ordinary things that went wrong, was it? It was like anything that you could, any remote thing that you could think of that could possibly go wrong went wrong. I mean, it's like what happened with him? I mean, it's like
the first thing was that he when he went over the rocky section on the goat trail. He did bend a wheel, so he went to go change it, and he burns his finger because trying to get the wheel off because it was rubbing, and so he's in pain. Mm-hmm. Then they realize that the tires that they've got on the car, the team put the wrong tires on. They ended up with a more of a medium compound or something like that, and they wanted a soft compound. When they went through the water splashes on that goat trail. They realized they did the windshield wipers. This is on the first run through. They ran the windshield wipers and the water didn't go away, but the windshield wipers ran. Well, what happened was somehow the mud and water came through the inside vent, like the defroster type vent thing, came on the inside of the windscreen. Don't know how that happened. That's freakish. you know, so they had that happen to them. So, okay, that was fine. They get through their first service and, you know, everything seems like it's all well. Then they go and do... This is on the next run through. That's when the team puts a GoPro on the car?
Yeah, this is the one thing that I have the biggest problem with. This is the one aspect of everything that went wrong with them that I have the biggest issue with. I mean, there is a mounting on the roof of the car for a GoPro, isn't there?
It usually is for those guys,
Yeah, and so why do you put a GoPro on the windshield? I mean, what happened was the GoPro was put on the windshield, and it was in the arc of the windshield wipers. So when they went through a puddle and needed to clear the windshield, the wiper... would only go as far as the GoPro camera, And then it burnt out. So it was stuck. So they like couldn't clean the windshield. So
and having to go through those water splashes like that. My goodness.
Yeah. So they have to stop and Craig Drew got out and actually wiped the windshield clear.
Yeah. He mentioned something about that. Yeah. Pulled the GoPro off. Then they found that the motor was burnt out and then they had to, get out. I mean, it was just comedy of errors, really. I mean, any one of these instances that happened to them wouldn't have cost them a race, but all combined together, it's like, what else can go wrong? And you don't want to ask that question because then something else will go wrong. Oh, I honestly felt so bad for them because it was just it was a cluster of things. It really was, and not all their fault.
No, but I mean, it's like the if you're the driver, surely you have the say if anything goes on the windshield of the car.
You'd think.
Yeah. So it's
it's a professional team. You shouldn't even have to tell them, right?
That's it. Yeah.
You know, when you reach that level, it should be pretty automatic, and something like that you wouldn't think would happen.
No.
And yet it did. Yeah. In the end, they were essentially, that's right. So Travis was set to win the event based on time.
Yeah.
By the time we went to the street stage in Detroit Lakes, and talk about a beautiful little town, by the way, that was great.
Being
right there on the lake and all that. Just wow. A whole lot of wow going on there.
Uh huh.
And you know, there's two runs of that little super special, and David would have to win both of those, even though he would have lost the event, so that the tiebreaker would go to him. So Travis only had to win one and the event.
Mm-hmm.
And we see David go by pretty quick. We're sitting up on the roof and of the it was those Fairfield Marriotts, and they took great care of us. They let us on the roof and everything to film. That was great stuff. Anyway, we see him go by, and Higgins go by, and he looked pretty darn quick. Then there's this big kind of gap in time. We're like, wait, okay, Travis should be coming. Why hasn't he started yet? Then we see Travis go by, and it's a little bit, noticeably slower. You know, this is Mr., Rallycross, as well as, he knows how to throw a car around. He likes to slide things, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you think he'd be just pushing to the max to make sure he won that title. And he was kind of pulling back a little bit. Then we get word, the reason why he pulled back a little bit is that David hit one of the bollards.
Yeah.
And it was a, 15-second penalty?
Yeah, 15-second penalty, I believe, yeah.
So that's why Travis didn't push it. Mm-hmm. He had the championship in hand. All he had to do was pretty much drive through and not lose 15 seconds, which isn't going to happen on something that's maybe a mile. So, and not hit a bollard himself, I guess. And so that's probably why he was being extra careful. So that was the championship sewn up for Travis. It's the first time he's won since, I think his last title was 2008, something like that. So it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
This is his first full year back in an American championship. When he ran last year and the year before, he did, select events because of his commitment that he had with Nitro Circus. So, not bad. Your first season back, you win a title. There's some controversy, obviously, with what happened at New England and all that stuff. But, that all said, they still performed well for the whole year under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And, hats off to them for doing a good job. I felt a little bad for David and Craig, but they've also had 6 consecutive championships. So it's kind of hard to feel too sorry for them, right?
Yeah, they can afford to let one slip by.
Yeah, exactly. But... you know it's going to be game on first event next year. So.
I'm sure it will be. Yeah.
Multiple championships were decided on this final event. We'll kind of go through a little bit of the results for the overall championship for the whole season. As we know, Travis, won based on that tiebreaker against Higgins, and third overall, Jeff Seahorn and Karen Jankowski. So. As far as overall goes, they got their restricted open car. Whenever they finished on the overall podium. So that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I mean that's consistency. That's where you're going to score the most points, isn't it? Getting on the overall podium. It's like, yeah, they did really well.
They did very consistent, very well. And for the first year with that car, that's a new build is always going to be a little bit rough. But and then of course, kind of moving on into that. Well, I guess if we stick with the open four-wheel drive, it's obvious Travis David, Barry McKenna ends up third in the open four-wheel drive. Barry's consistently got better. Still had too many DNFs, but his pace kept improving. I don't think he was scaring Leon Jordan in the passenger seat there as much anymore. you can see that he's got potential to really bring it to the Subaru guys. That car has the ability, and as long as he gets the experience behind him, I think he'd be a real threat.
Yeah, and that would be great, if we've got more than two drivers regularly duking it out for a rally title, and by extension to the national championship, that would be great. To think that you've got like more than just Subaru drivers duking it out, once you've got competition between more than two teams, then that can only be good in my mind.
Agreed, agreed. Then we had, of course, restricted open four-wheel drive. Jeff and Karen won that. But really, just 2 points behind Travis Neath and Chris Iskoukas. Again, really good competitors, so consistent. Travis, though, he's like, I'm just going to try and keep it on the road at this event. It got so slick out there. But, he made no mistakes until the street stage. In Detroit Lakes. I think you got a pretty up close and personal view of that one.
yeah, just a little, didn't it? Yeah, it was down there at that sharp left hander by the pavilion. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I
He
think
got a little excited and was like,
a little.
ooh, it's the end of the season. I know I got second place, but man, that's awesome. I got that big check coming. Woo! And understeer into bollard.
Yeah, you're on gravel tires on cold tarmac. It's not the most it's not conducive to a great deal of grip, is it? So he just kind of like went straight on into the bollards, and yeah, I was only stood about 20 feet from there when that happened. So that's the closest I've been to an incident. So.
Yeah, not something you probably want to be any closer to than that, for
No.
sure. But all in good fun. Nothing was harmed. I think they basically put a little crack in the bumper, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So leaked some water out of one of those bollards, and that's
Oh
about
yeah, that water flies quite a distance, when they when you get hit by a car. Yeah, you want to ask Eric Nelson. He was stood about 25, 30 feet away from the bollard, and I think he got wet.
Made for a good show.
Oh yeah.
All the fans, around the area, they're definitely cheering on what happened there. But they came in a strong second place. What was also really cool is with the Subaru contingency program, Rob Weir was there, and he had these big paycheck things when we were at the award ceremony the next day. And the big cardboard check things, and handed those out to Karen and to or to Jeff Seahorn and Karen Jankowski, as well as Krista and Travis Neese. And that was kind of cool to kind of have that big professional check thing. That was kind of fun to have that. So they've got some contingency money to compete more next year, which would be good. So good on them. One of the more disappointing things was in, well, and also enlightening things was probably that production four-wheel drive, because it was great to see, we thought Lachlan had that one just wrapped up,
Yeah.
but
Oh,
then
yeah.
his engine gave up the ghost, right? So there he had to get towed into service. I think it was between the first and second loop.
Yeah.
So it was the end of the first loop, yeah, and he was towed into service by Jeff Seahorn. And it turns out that the motor just went. Frustrating as all hell to him. But that meant never a winner. Second place finisher pretty consistently. Dennis Ramiro ends up being the production four-wheel drive champion.
Yeah, I mean that's it. It's all you to finish first. First, you got to finish. It's the old adage, isn't it? And it's like when you mentioned that he completed the season and never won an event. It reminded me of Formula One way back in the day. Didn't Keke Rosberg actually win his Formula One Drivers' Championship without winning a Grand Prix? That's going way, way back, but I think he did. So, but yeah, but that's what that put me in mind of.
Yeah, it was great to see him on the podium, though. Yeah. He was totally in shock. He's an Ecuadorian, I guess, mm-hmm. and they're part of a group of Ecuadorians that have been competing on the East Coast this year quite a bit, both in NASA events and in ARA. And yeah. Great to see them get the title. I love to see the joy in his eyes because we didn't actually at other events for some reason I always just kind of missed him. I don't know if he was dodging me because he was concerned about his English not being so well, and it was totally fine. Mm-hmm. It was just so fun to see the level of excitement in his eyes when we talked to him on the podium. So that was probably one of my big moments. I love seeing mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
But winner in that class for this event though was we had a Canadian come down in a brand new build, Nick Spencer. And David Ma, that was cool to see them come down. We always like to see cross-border competition.
Absolutely.
So they won the event in production four-wheel drive, but they of course weren't in it for the championship. Those are only US event, but it's kind of a shakedown for that car, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
That was it. It was a shakedown for their car. You know, they weren't pushing it at all. I remember when we were stood there at the crossroads jump the second time. He really let off the power. He came off the power very, very early on the approach to the jump and barely got any distance whatsoever. He wasn't pushing that car at all. So yep, it was nothing more than a shakedown run for him. But if you can win in a shakedown run, then that's all right.
Yeah, definitely. Wouldn't have happened though without some help from fellow competitors. You know, I think it was on day one that he had a broken piece of suspension, and he walks down to the Dirtfish guys that are competing and says, you know, basically going from team to team looking for a part, and no problem. You know, everybody looks out for each other.
That's
and,
it. Yeah.
It's just, you know, one of the many things we love about the sport that is rally. So,
yeah.
And who was that's right, our champion. It was Dennis Romero. He actually ran out of spare tires. He got multiple flats, and it was Lachlan O'Sullivan lent him a spare, I believe, on, I think it was that crossroads, because he had yet another flat he could, like, and he wouldn't have made it through without a spare tire, and yet that helped him win the championship. I think it was Lachlan's spare. He got spares from a couple of different people because I think he had only one spare on him, and he went through that one and then had to, again, borrow a couple from other people. And so just one of those things that without the camaraderie, you wouldn't have such good competition.
That's it, yeah. I mean, it's like if we get to an end of the year show and we have to come up with a camaraderie award, who are you going to give it to? Because like everybody does something for somebody else at every event, don't they, sir?
Yeah, that would be a very tough one to give this one because it is so great in how everybody looks out and helps out each other. And even the top guys, you know, we talked about it from New England where, you know, it was Travis Estrada was helping out with giving brake fluid to Travis Neese.
Yeah.
You know, so they could get going again and things like that. So, yeah, everybody helps out everybody. It's a great thing. And I guess finally we'll talk about the open two-wheel drive, which Ryan Millen and Rianna Gelsomino, a perfect season in the Rally RAV4.
Yeah. I mean, if they've got a perfect seat, what more can you say? I mean, their preparation was perfect. I mean, they got... they must have a wonderful kind of rapport in the car to be able to do this like week in, week out. I mean, they were competing in other Rally America events, and didn't they do a NASA event as well? But I mean, they were always there, do it in everything. So yeah, I mean, what can you say?
Yeah, they're consistent as you could be. Mm-hmm. You know, Dave Wallingford and Leanne Janil end up second in the championship. Of course, they didn't have the car to even be competitive the last two events. You know, the normally aspirated R2 is nothing like the turbo Fiesta ST that they're running. So, but you know, Dave rolled that on the mountain, and so they had to make adjustments. But exciting news, though. I don't know if this is breaking news or if everybody just kind of already knows about it. At least from what I saw, he was looking at liveries for a Fiesta R5 when we were leaving Ojibwe. So he did test drive an R5. I'm hoping, thinking, sounds like he's going to be competing in an R5 next year.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? You got... Yes, yeah. I mean, the more Fiestas we see on the rally stages of America, the happier I'll be.
Yeah, so. Just add a little more diversity. It's a good thing. Sure. That's for sure. Yeah. So I guess that's kind of our championship done. Favorite memories for you from Ojibwe in the final round?
Well, yeah. Well, as great as it was to be stood with you guys at crossroads there at the jump, you know, I have to, yeah, this Ojibwe, it's my home state rally, you know, and I know many of the people involved with that on many levels of the organization, and I was, as you know, we'd been,
that's it. Your
been,
wife was volunteering.
My wife
she was actually
was,
working.
My wife was working MTC, yeah, and you know, it's like I've volunteered the first year I was there, and then the second year I was co-driving, and so, you know, and I built up a good relationship with a lot of the people there, and you know, in the weeks before the event, I didn't have a co-drive, and I was plugging away trying to get one, and then turned up on Wednesday morning at registration one, somebody had a problem with their co-driver, and they were a co-driver short. They didn't have a co-driver for the event. So Eric Nelson's wife, she went to bat for me. She said to the guy as she was doing the registration, she said, "Well, I know a co-driver. We've got a co-driver for you." And he said, "No, I need somebody with a bit of experience." And he said, no, this guy podiumed last year. I mean, Nikki was going to bat for me to try and get a co-drive.
Awesome.
So, I mean, I can't thank her enough for that. I mean, I didn't get the, I guess, you know, some drivers and co-drivers have real rapports, and they don't want to like break up that team. They'd rather not compete than compete with somebody else. So I didn't get a co-drive, but it was really nice to have somebody go to bat for you like that.
Yeah, I would have to say that for me, for this final event, it was really cool that Matt and I got recognized. That was kind of one of the neat things when we were out there on one of the stages. There was some, you know, big fans that follow the live streams and recognize who we were as we were setting up our camera and stuff. So that was one of the cool things. And just the fact that I've gotten to know a lot of the competitors more. Summit Punjabi cracks me the hell up. actually, there's a good story. For those that didn't hear it, Summit has a friend that was a co-driver back when he competed in India. And apparently this friend of his was in the States, visiting somewhere else in the States, actually, and called him up and said, "Hey, you know, I want to come see you. Can we go out for a beer somewhere?" And he's like, "Yeah, I know this place. It's up in Minnesota in the sticks. And by the way, bring your racing suit." So that was a great, great story. Unfortunately, they crashed out on that second running of the crossroads, and they were done. But still, Summit finished third overall, I think, in the production four-wheel drive for the championship. So he's quite the character. I want to see him do more rounds next year. He was always fun to talk to.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, some of the local guys, too. Al Dantes, is nice to see him in person for the first time and chat with him a bit, and some of the other folks. Just a great crew there, a great rally. And, gosh, I can't believe the season's over. It just seems a little bit too early, although yet I'm also kind of relieved because I've been so freaking busy. You know?
Yeah. Oh, and I've just remembered something else. So I remember when you were setting up on the Friday to do the interviews before everybody went out, and Dave Wallingford walked up to you and gave you this little box.
Oh, that was great. Yes. He walks up to Matt and I and he's like, "Here, this should look a little better." And we open it up and silly me for not remembering, and huge thanks to Dave Wallingford for this. He works in the sound and media industry, and here's this beautifully designed little triangular flag for the microphone, and says ARA on it, you know, and it was perfect, you know. So now all of a sudden all of our interviews have this nice, you know, professional-looking flagged microphone that we got to walk around with, so... huge thanks to him for giving us that gift. It was really cool. And I guess it goes to show that he doesn't mind us shoving a microphone in his face. He just wants it to look right.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Got to have a good-looking microphone in his face.
So that was really cool, too. Yeah. I guess that's the thing. It's been really humbling as I've learned a lot from this. It seems like, obviously, all the drivers, other than those that are used to always talking to microphone, you know, like the super guys and whatnot, but everybody seems like they've grown and learned together and had a lot of fun with this. And we hope to do just that much more in 2018. So cool stuff. So that was Ojibwe. That was the American Rally Association National Championship. There is another championship still going on, Rally America stuff. Unfortunately, it was like kind of late in coming, some of the stuff that came out from Rally Wyoming. That was an interesting one. They, I guess, created their own course, basically on some private property. They just took these giant fields, ran a grader over it, and created roads right there in the dirt.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting concept, doesn't it? Isn't it? It's very nice if you've got the land and are able to do that. But I don't know as if it made for a good rally course. I mean, I've seen it described as the road was created by the route was created by a drunken grader driver.
Right. Yeah. It was twisty and turny and you barely had a chance to look up from your notes as a co-driver. And although that can be good too. I mean, there's actual roads that are like that sometimes too. Wildcat Pass at Olympus comes to mind, where, you know, I remember talking to co-drivers at the end of that one, and they're just like kind of out of breath going, "I've had enough," you know, especially on that one, because like 20 miles or something like that of that. And I can totally understand that after a while that can be, you know, super tight and twisty constantly. If it's done too tight to where it's like just a really long rallycross, you know, SCCA rallycross style course, that's going to be a little obnoxious. But as long as they had some open fast flowing sections too to mix it up, that can be good too.
It's first year for this event, so I mean they'll be learning from this and incorporating changes into next year, I hope. So,
and they can change whatever they want because it's not a real road, you know. You're making your own.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So interesting stuff there. But we do have a couple of results that came out of that one. Rally America's website started working again. So that's good. They were down for what, like 2 months? It was pretty tough to look up information. It was a little frustrating for us that like to look at data.
Yeah.
I guess Art Grushka came out with the win on that one in his Mitsubishi Mirage Franken machine that he's got. So
we love that car. I love the look of it. It's a great looking car. So.
I got to sit next to Brian Bouffier in that damn car, and it was wicked quick. So no slouch that thing. For sure. Pat Morrow comes up in second with Ollie Holter sitting next to him, so good for him. So Super Production Cars in second and third. Tim Rooney with Alex Gelsomino. It's funny, while Alex was competing at Wyoming, we had Rhiannon competing at Ojibwe on the same weekend. So,
So good trophies to go above the fireplace there in the Gelsomino household for that weekend, for sure.
Definitely. So as we kind of wrap things up here, I guess I just wanted to give a little bit of a opportunity, just kind of, I don't know, season's over for ARA and all that stuff. Any last things that you want to, parting gifts you want to give us, Ian?
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch it as a first season, hasn't it? You know, you go in with great hopes and expectations, and there are always things that come along and make you realize that you haven't prepared for everything, and but all in all, it's been a good first championship. I mean the main titles went down to the last event. I mean, in fact, they went down to the last stages of the last event, so you can't ask for better than that. And really excited to look forward to the next season. Hopefully, dropping a big hint here, hopefully I will get to co-drive in some of the events next year.
Well, we hope to have you sitting in the right seat. Sometime soon. One of my notes for this kind of wrapping things up, I learned that I cannot sleep on a plane. I tried doing a red eye out to Ojibwe. Apparently I cannot sleep, not even a little bit. But the bonus part of that was when I ended up in North Dakota, then at Fargo there, I ended up landing at the same time as Sam Albert and Michelle Miller, the Dirtfish instructors. And they were competing in an open four-wheel drive car. And I went out to breakfast with them, and we spent, a good hour and a half at breakfast just kind of talking rally and visiting. And it was just so much fun. Mm-hmm. And so I love the competitors in the sport. They're great people.
Yeah.
And it's just fun that I can, I can recognize these people when I get off on a plane, and there they are. And, just go hang out. It's fun times. It's really fun times.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I do get a little bit jealous when you're texting us and messaging us saying, "Oh, I'm sat with Travis Pastrana and Sam Albert and Michelle Miller and Jeff Seahorn. I'm just sat in the airport bar waiting with these guys for our flights to leave." It's like, yeah, you just get a little bit jealous of you.
it's very humbling. I don't want to gloat. I'm mm-hmm. as amazed as you are at that experience. Mm-hmm. And, but when you get down to it, they're just regular people. They're fun to talk to. Mm-hmm. They're just like your neighbor or your friend. And, all of them have some great stories to tell too. And, some of them not, for putting on the air, but it's a great time. And I hope that those that have watched the live streams have enjoyed following it and watching it as much as I've enjoyed doing it, and all the hard work that Matt has put in. I cannot say enough how much work Matt Kalish has put into doing all this media stuff. I'm just the guy with the microphone. I show up. Yeah, I do some work. Obviously you have to come up with the interview questions and things like that, and I kind of like what I do for here, so I've got some experience with it. But he's the guy behind the camera all the time. I like to get him on the mic every now and then. We had a lot of fun on the final stages where we talked back and forth. I really like that stuff. I'm hoping to have more of the two-person conversation stuff for next season. I think that adds a little more. It's easier to fill the time gaps, between cars for sure. Yeah. Anyway, I've just had a blast, and I hope everybody else enjoyed it as much as we have. And make sure that you follow Matt Kalish out there. He puts in a lot of work, and it's because of him that we get this awesome content. And I guess that's kind of about it for me. The other last thing I was going to say, it's 10 years since the passing of Colin McRae, and I wanted to ask you, as a Brit, Ian, what is your historical knowledge of Colin McRae, because I got into Rally a little later. My relation to him was first, it's like, his name was on a title for a video game. By the time I got into Rally, he had already passed. And but I watched all kinds of stuff. I actually have a book that's signed by Nikki Grist, his former co-driver, and that kind of talks about his history and his legacy. And he was a larger than life character, but as a Brit and how big he was there. When did you first learn about him, and is he part of what influenced your draw into Rally, or what?
No, I was interested in Rally a long time before McRae, and so my interest goes a lot further back than that. But he was when he appeared on the scene with his devil may care, like, if in doubt, flat out attitude. He was a breath of fresh air. I mean, he was excitement in the sport of rally, because rally in the UK hadn't had any huge success since the days of like Tony Pond and Roger Clark, which was like the 1970s, early to mid 70s.
It's kind of
So
just kind of clubman thing nobody really followed, right?
for him to come on the scene and throw his cars around. He would compete in he was like what was his first car? His first car was like a Talbot Sunbeam, and in the Scottish Rally Championships. And he took he would the cars that he drove to start with, because you're on a limited budget. His cars were like way underpowered, and he would always wring every last ounce of performance out of the cars. I mean, one year, it was before he broke into Subaru, and it was in the Scottish Rally Championship. He took the Scottish Rally Championship in a Vauxhall Nova, which was like what it's like a it's like a nothing car. I mean, he was beating guys in more powerful, bigger engine cars, and he won the series in a Vauxhall Nova. I can't remember what it well went down to the last round, and I think the guy who was leading the championship at the point at that time, his name is now lost in history. Who remembers those who come second day? And he took it right. This guy was in a much more powerful car. I can't remember whether it might have been a Sierra. But this guy crashed out on the last rat that the last rally and the last rally, and Colin McRae won the Scottish Rally Championship in a far less powerful car.
Wow. Well, here in the States, he obviously made a name for Rally here too, competing in the X Games when X Games did they threw Rally into X Games with a kind of ESPN affiliation, because Rally America was working with ESPN at the time, and he did that famous roll in the car, and before the car is finished rolling back onto its wheels, so it did a full roll. You can already see the onboard. He's putting that car back into second gear, foot in the clutch, and boom. As soon as it lands, he's off going again, as if nothing happened. It ended up not winning because of the loss of time there. But holy cow. I mean, it just goes to show what kind of guy he was and what he brought to the sport. And, I wish I was following it back then. Unfortunately, I was not, and didn't really know enough about it. I just thought it was this thing that happened over in Europe, not really realizing it was here in the States. But now I'm fully involved, and it's because of characters like that that drew me in, and watching all that stuff online, and here I am, doing what I do, and helping organize the Oregon Trail Rally, of which our first meeting for the 2018 Oregon Trail Rally, which will be the first event of the American Rally Association National Championship in 2018. They're going to do all U.S. events next year, and that will be the first one. So it's April 20th through the 22nd next year. So we had our first meeting just last night. So there you are.
Excellent. Oh, so all the organization starts now.
Yes, you have to start really early. Start assigning roles to people of what they're going to do, and just kind of get that pre-planning, You know, if you're going to try and find new roads or whatever, you got to start way early on that
Oh, yeah.
stuff. A lot of people don't realize just how much work goes into organizing. If you want to help get sponsors to help pay for an event, well, guess what? You got to start talking to them before they've had their fiscal year over, so they, you know, get you in their budget. All that stuff all makes a difference if you start early. You can't you can't wait. You really just can't. So, I mean, some of the stuff obviously you can't wait. You have to do it at the very end. You know, stage setups, things like that. But there's a ton of work that happens behind the scenes well in advance. And yeah, I'm in it from the beginning. You know, I'm trying to do my part to help the sport grow locally, and as well as what I'm doing with ARA. So it's a little bit of work, but it's all in fun, and it's a great crew of people we got. So on that note, I think it's time to end our show.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to Derek for the awesome new microphone thing here. I hope it sounds even better for you guys. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter. We got our Instagram. We've got actually some Red Bull GRC photos we'll be posting up this week. We had our photographer Tedrick Mealy was out at that event outside of Seattle. And with that, have a great week, everybody. We'll be back soon, probably talking after Spain. WRC Spain. We'll try and get also maybe an interview or two coming up soon too. So thanks for listening. Have a good night. This is Mike Shaw for Ian Holmes and Open Paddock. Take care.